Thanks, Steve. That's right, you heard me. Thanks, Steve. Remember Steve, Wendy?
Do you remember on Friday I said I missed him?
Yes.
What?
Yeah, it got very emotional, wow. Steve. Very emotional.
Missed you, too. We had a great group of WGN listeners in Portugal. Beautiful weather, wonderful country, and the most lovely people there. It was just a great time.
And you know what else he did, Bill? He's trying to make his catchphrase go global.
Oh, really?
So you had a Portuguese man.
He was our waiter that night. I have a little video posted on my Facebook page saying, I'll say the world.
And was this man at all inquisitive as to what that meant?
Yes, we had quite a conversation about it.
I said, how did you explain it?
I said, it's a phrase that kind of, it's an affirmative, like, yes, absolutely. I said, my wife really hates it when I do this.
Yeah.
Everyone does.
No, not everyone.
Did you explain that it's sweeping the nation by storm? Like, nobody can contain it?
Well,
it's so
worldwide
big.
Now. Yeah, it's, big. It's been in Portugal, and there have been pictures of it in Switzerland. So he got a great kick out of it.
He sent me a video of the waiter
really?
Saying, I'll say the world.
Right. And what was the look on the waiter's face, Wendy? How did the waiter seem?
Like he didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, that's perfect. That's excellent. We missed you tremendously, Steve. What did you bring us?
I brought you, I was going to bring you beautiful weather and little custard torts. And
yeah.
Frankly, I forgot both of
that's
them.
That's all right.
Yeah,
that's
I'm
fine.
Sorry about
You're
that.
You're under a lot of pressure.
Uh-huh.
I'll say the world.
That was the guy from Portugal saying it.
The waiter, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll say the world.
See that?
It took, there was some stumble.
Right.
But he finally got it out and the world's a better place.
English isn't his first language.
Yes. Yes.
Great, great group of people. We do these trips and we come back. People are just hugging and stuff, saying goodbye at the airport. It's so much fun the way these groups gel.
Well, it's very rewarding. How could it be anything but? You
Super
put together
awesome.
a nice package.
I'll say the world.
Right. Nice package, Bertrand.
Yeah. Say it again.
Quote it. Did anyone else have a hard time getting into work besides myself because of there's road closures? I don't know if it's like this in every direction. You came from the West.
Yes.
Steve came from Portugal, so he's going to win this one, right. Hands down.
I heard Mary's reports all morning, so I was paying attention, and I had more trouble with the teachers' march.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what I had more trouble with. This I knew to stay away from McCormick Place and around Trump Tower.
Yeah.
So Lower Wacker was fine. 290 was fine.
Oh.
And because of the strike, I've been getting in a little quicker than usual.
Right. There's less traffic.
And Lower Wacker might be bad later when he's at Trump Tower.
Right.
So.
But I paid attention, and I actually got in here earlier than usual. Bertrand was worried about you because you weren't here.
Every route, every single street that would take me eastbound was closed, one after another after another. And you don't find that out until you're
on
within
it.
A block, you know? And so then they're trying to channel like two or sometimes three lanes of traffic into either a left-hand turn or a right-hand turn.
How does that go?
So not well. Not well. So I'm like snaking all around the city, and I'm parked in Mokena. I'm parked so far away, I have no idea how I got here. But it's impossible. At some point, I just had to say, I have to park somewhere.
Or you're not going to be here.
I won't be here for the show. So I just found a random parking spot, parking lot, and I'm in there.
So it's like the blizzard when people just got out of their cars on the expressway.
It's exactly like
and
that.
And walked home from there.
Yes. That's right. Exactly how it is.
Weren't you listening to Mary's closures? Because she was explaining everything.
I was, but there were more. Mary, with all due respect.
They keep adding them.
You're right.
I'm trying to keep up, and it's
impossible.
Like the list just keeps going along. They just close. You know, now Wabash is closed, Wacker and Hubbard. That might have been one of your closures. But, yeah, they just keep closing
Now, the good news is the one that I did finally park in, which is not my usual spot, is right across from Trump Tower. So that should be easy to get out of, right?
You have just screwed yourself.
Yeah. That I couldn't have actually picked a worse place to park, really. I should have just double parked it on Michigan Avenue.
Don't
it would have been
a
better.
Parking place?
I do. I couldn't get there.
I couldn't get there.
Was no street that led from me.
Gosh, how am I going to get out?
It would be like, remember in Highlights magazine where there was a maze and you'd have to get to except that there was no wall that was open to get to the prize.
You should have taken an Uber.
Actually, in retrospect, that would have been the way to do it.
But now 11:30, I believe, is when he will be heading over to Trump Tower, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, that's what they keep telling us.
So, Mary,
everything should be clear
by the time we leave, but not Mary.
I don't know how long he's going to stay there.
And will be protesters and supporters, perhaps, and it's just going to be a mess.
Well, the protesters are already there, and I'm sure Stevie's going to have lunch, you know.
So yeah.
Got to have lunch while
Where's
you're
he
there.
Going for lunch?
Well, he's going to be at the Trump Tower.
Nemo subs. That's my guess. They're not hard to find. Well, they're not easy to find, but he loves them. Do we want to talk about the Bears game, or is it best not to discuss the Bears game? It's up to you.
All I'm going to tell you about the Bears game is, you know, a lot of times people say, oh, I turn the radio on to listen to that audio instead of the announcers on TV.
Yes.
I watch the game while listening to this. And I actually had a good time.
This would add to
it. With
the
balls being dropped.
Right.
And, Benny Hill?
Yes. And the field goals not being made.
Yes.
And taking a knee to let the clock run out. And I enjoyed myself while listening to this as I watched the game.
It does add to the frivolity of the game. It really does. All right. Now, I didn't see a second of it. So you tell me, who do we pin this one on? Is it easy to blame somebody or something for this one or not?
Mitch Trubisky did not have a very good beginning. Third quarter, they started doing stuff. Mitch had a nice
by
little
stuff,
run.
You mean being more productive?
Yes.
Moving the ball in the right direction?
Yes.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Matt Nagy is getting criticized for letting the clock run out and not getting a little closer to the goal because Eddie Pinheiro did. Boy, that was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
It was.
But we've
right
seen it
there.
Before, right?
We've
it's an ending that we've seen more than once.
I know, but it could have ended so gloriously.
Yeah.
So I just want to remember, Nagy was a genius last year, right?
He was considered by many to be a genius.
Okay, right.
Who said that?
Your football insiders.
People loved his little...
People who know the game were calling him a genius. Hey, this guy's a tactical genius. He knows what he's doing.
His gimmick plays, his trick plays. And...
Right.
His brain was so big, he couldn't wear a full baseball cap.
He has to wear a visor.
Right.
Because no cap will contain his brain.
I don't know. He's still going with, I did what I did, and I am what I am, and I'm not...
But are you noticing he and other key members of the Bears are a little more surly than they were a few weeks ago?
A little defensive.
They are, aren't they? I'm not imagining that.
You're not imagining that.
Fixable or not fixable?
I have no idea.
Hard to say, right?
I'm just going to keep watching.
Why?
Because I live in Chicago.
I know.
I root for the Bears.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, Jimmy Mack was sitting there watching every second of it. I was not. I was kind of doing things.
Better move. A much better move.
But it's on.
It dilutes
to
the agony if you're doing anything while you're watching, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I have to give them a chance because someday they're going to make me happy.
All right.
That's all I can tell you.
That's loyalty. That's extremely loyal.
I mean, if you were playing tennis or you had plans to do something else, I don't blame you for not watching.
I had no plans to do anything yesterday.
Well, that's just mean.
I just wanted to save myself the grief and heartache.
There's no grief or heartache.
There isn't?
No, I just...
With the Chicago Bears, there's no grief or heartache? They're built on grief and heartache.
Yeah, well, I'm used to it.
They should be sponsored by the Heimlich Maneuver, because all they know how to do is choke. That should be their sponsor.
I'm telling you, people, put the Benny Hill theme on.
It makes it more believable.
Yeah, and just more fun.
I know.
Then you smile and giggle, and you don't care about the
outcome.
Like
their opponents, the same way their opponents smile and giggle. All right, we'll take a break. We've got plenty to discuss with you. If you want to jump in, we'd love to hear from you. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's supposed to snow tonight.
That's what I'm hearing.
And maybe tomorrow. We'll
No one wants that.
I don't even care anymore. You know it's coming.
But not yet. We let it come closer to the holidays, please.
Yeah, I guess. I went to the Museum of Broadcast Communications on Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
The great Svengoolie was celebrated. It says 40-year anniversary of being on TV.
Mm.
And it's always a pleasure to see him.
Mm-hmm.
And then I checked out the Stay Tuned Rock on TV exhibit that they had there. It's really cool.
Yeah, I would imagine.
I'm really mad at myself for missing the traveling Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Museum. But this is pretty cool, and there are a lot of things. I saw Ringo Starr's suit coat that he wore somewhere.
Oh, that one?
On TV.
Yeah.
It didn't look very Ringo-esque.
What were you expecting?
It just seemed too conservative for me.
Oh.
I had fun looking at the Blob and Bill Jackson.
Wait, the Blob is there from Cartoon Town?
Yes.
Really?
I mean, it's not, I don't think it's really clay. It's, it looks just like the Blob. And
on the pedestal that it used to be on?
Yep. Garfield Goose.
That would be fun to see.
That was really cool. Svengoolie's coffin, of course. Yeah. And Dave Plyer did a great job, a little Q&A with him.
What did you learn about Svengoolie that you didn't know prior to Saturday evening?
Not much. I know a lot about him.
Well, you've written some books, some very telling books about him over the years.
They've not been published.
No. It's a hobby, but it'll pay off someday.
He's just such a nice guy.
Yeah.
And they had Billy Goat cheeseburgers there. Oh. It was catered. And
Svengoolie and Billy Goat cheeseburgers?
Yes, that's Chicago, man.
Yeah, that's a good night out.
And just walking around and looking at, they had Josie and the Pussycats information on the wall with a little cell.
How come?
Because this is rock on TV and they were a band.
They counted them in? Oh, that was nice of them.
The Archies.
The Archies were in there?
The Monkees.
Were the Bugaloos in there?
Yes.
They were?
Yes.
Like to see that.
There was something...
Paul Revere... Oh, no, they weren't on TV. What was the cartoon? There was some cartoon. It wasn't Paul Revere and the Raiders, but it was something similar. It was somebody's name from history. Do you remember?
Napoleon and the Bonapartes?
No. I'll think of it.
I think
there was a cartoon for a little while that was like that. And, of course, they solve crimes. They always solve...
Most rock bands
if you're
going
to get a cartoon and you're a rock band, you're going to solve a crime from time to time.
I got to stand at the podium from American Bandstand that Dick Clark. That was pretty cool. And I didn't get a picture of that, like a dummy.
Now, he always kind of leaned on it.
Mm-hmm.
He had kind of a lean. Did you do that?
Yes, I did. No one was looking at me. I was like, hey, Jim, look where I am. And no one turned around.
No one even noticed?
No, because there were just really cool guitars there, and Joan Jett's leather jacket with some swear word buttons on it. It's really cool, and it's really worth going to.
Were there other celebrities there on Saturday?
Dean Richards was there.
That counts?
Dave Plyer.
And Dave Plyer, and you.
Yeah.
Three celebrities and out. That's all you need.
That's all that I saw. Maybe there were more.
Maybe in the back.
But it was a nice little presentation, and it was very fun.
Dick Clark did not make it?
No. I believe Rich Coase is scheduled to appear on our show on Halloween.
Yes,
I believe
so.
That has become the norm.
Yeah, every Halloween.
We've had him in the last several Halloweens. It's great to see
him. It's very fun.
Yeah.
Why did Bill say Blob was from Cartoon Town? What is that? Blob was in Giggle Snort Hotel, to my knowledge. I just remember BJ and Dirty Dragon.
Well... The show started out being called Cartoon Town with Bill Jackson, and the Blob was a fixture on there. He may have been angrier. Yeah, that's it.
You could do it better.
Yeah, that's it. Like that. Yeah.
That amused us, didn't it?
Yeah. Shouldn't have put it down. He was just a big mound of clay that Bill Jackson would form into other entities.
And I just have to tell you that Bill Jackson is amazing.
Yes.
And
he's the reason Steve and I wear derby hats to this day.
Was he there?
No.
He still alive or no?
Yes.
He's still alive.
He's old.
I would love to meet him.
I would too.
Yeah.
He had the red derby hat and suit and the blue one.
Right.
And I was really... I admired him so tremendously. Listeners could send in their name with their initials.
Yes.
And he would take their initials, put it on a big pad of paper with a marker, and he would write their initials and then turn it into a caricature or a picture of
them. Well, he would ask what you wanted to be, what profession you wanted to be when you're older. So he would take your initials and what you wanted to be, and then a masterpiece was created.
It was amazing. So fantastic. I did that myself all the time. I asked all my friends, hey, what do you want to be? And I would take their initials.
Oh.
Mine weren't that good, but I really did it a lot.
Yeah.
And then I also, you know, every kid had Play-Doh, but I made my mom get me, like, the real deal gray clay, and I put all my clay balls together and tried to have my own blob, and I would take cardboard cutouts of eyes and eyebrows and mouths, because he would put that on there, and I really enjoyed myself. That is such a good childhood memory.
He inspired you.
100%. I'm not an artist, nor am I a ceramics master,
right.
So I don't know what he inspired me to do. I did this alone in my room, but it was fun, and it brought me back to my childhood looking at that.
Yeah,
the kids had no idea who that was, so I said, please watch some videos. They're 20 and 16. They don't...
So to them, Maynard Thumbtwanger never existed?
No.
Oh, that's sad.
The puppets were there.
Which puppets?
An old lady.
Mother Plumtree.
Yeah, she was there.
She was there?
And her two cohorts. There were two other...
Wally and Weird?
Yeah.
They were also there?
Mm-hmm.
You were holding back when I asked which celebrities were there. No offense to Dean Richards and Dave Plyer, but...
It's part
Weird
of the
and
exhibit.
Wally were there? The Lemon Joe Kid, was he there?
I don't remember. No. Ringo, by the way, it's Justin from the Museum of Broadcast Communication. Thank you for helping me. Ringo's jacket was when he was on SNL.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's
great. So it all correlated to what these people wore on television. Yeah. Pete Seeger's guitar. It was all really cool and worth going to.
The cartoon that I couldn't remember the name of earlier, where I said it was somebody from history and then the band had a name that was tied in.
Oh, what was it?
The cartoon was Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kids.
Oh, I remember
that. Who isn't really... Like, I thought it was somebody more prominent in history.
Yeah.
But still, that was a cartoon for a while.
I do remember that.
Yeah. They solved crimes, Wendy, because that's if you're a kid on a cartoon in the 70s, that was your thing. You were in a rock band and you solved crimes.
Were there that many crimes back then?
Yes, back then there were a lot.
Now there are way more.
Always having to do with something kind of supernatural
for some reason.
As Goober and the Ghost Chasers, the Funky Phantom, and Scooby-Doo will attest.
Yes. Speaking of Scooby-Doo, Scrappy-Doo getting a mention on SNL in the monologue.
Well deserved.
Chance the Rapper was so... This was one of the best SNL episodes I've seen in a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
He's a great addition.
Yeah,
I think
he's a lot of fun.
Be part of the cast. I do.
All right.
He was so good. I loved his open. I loved seeing the CTU, Chicago Teachers Union, shirt on him at the end.
Several cast members.
Alex Moffat.
Yeah.
Cecily Strong.
Yeah.
And Chris Rudd.
They all did. All of them have ties from here, so that was some nice support, wasn't it?
And why was Jason Momoa on? I am not complaining, because boy, do I like to look at him.
Steve?
So let me just tell you, I had a long travel day yesterday.
Yeah.
And we're at an airport in Porto after Saturday Night Live ends here in the States, a little bit. And I'm reading all the tweets about how it's the best, one of the best ones ever, and how great the episode was. And then I see this, the mermaid guy on it, and I don't get him at all.
You mean Aquaman?
I'd like to get him.
I don't understand his popularity a bit.
He's smoking hot.
Really?
And he's Aquaman, the Little Mermaid.
I didn't mean that in a bad way. It just came out. But
would you, if he was here,
jealous.
Steve, would you still say that?
The Little Mermaid?
Yeah.
I didn't.
Oh, I know you. You're the Little Mermaid.
Honestly, I didn't remember what movie he was in, but I knew he was half fish.
And he's married to Lisa Bonet.
Lisa Bonet, by the way, married to Aquaman and the mother of Catwoman. Not bad.
Only you have figured that out.
That's pretty cool.
It is cool.
Yeah.
Zoe, what's her name?
Zoe
Kravitz.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
God, Lenny Kravitz. Why she left him? Although
I know.
God, she got two studs in one lifetime.
And she doesn't seem to have any personality.
Lisa Bonet?
Yeah, she's just I don't know, stoic all the time.
She's giving birth to Catwoman and she's married to Aquaman. What else do you need?
So has he done anything? He wasn't in Game of Thrones, right?
He was in Game of Thrones for a while.
He was?
Yeah. He was.
He should have been if he wasn't.
He was Daenerys's... he was one of the early... I don't remember their names.
I don't know. I've never seen it. I just know he was a part of it for a while. That's where he reached prominence. And then, you know, he's been an international superstar ever since. But I think the key to him is he's just...
Look at him. That's the key.
Yeah, he's put together well.
And who accused him of having a dad bod?
Oh, I don't know. Did somebody do that?
Yeah, the internet.
Really?
I know.
No, he's ripped. You know how these mermaids are, Wendy.
I can't believe
all they do is swim around.
I'm sorry,
in schools and lift weights.
It really was. Now you like the first half of it. I thought the whole show was one of the funniest SNLs I've seen in quite a long time.
I don't remember ever seeing an episode where they broke in every scene. Like there was never a scene where somebody didn't laugh. And I'm okay with that. He laughed quite a bit. But he's got a quick recoil. Like, a lot of times, he'd be laughing hysterically at something and figure it out and then do the rest of the scene. A lot of actors can't do that.
No, and when we go off on our little giggle fest,
gone for the rest of the week. I don't know how he was able to pull that
especially
off.
Especially left. That's my favorite.
Yeah.
When Blair goes, he's gone.
Yes. That's
I
true.
Know, it's I like it.
Once a year or something.
And it's usually when he says something he's very proud of. You know what I mean?
I'm not saying that's not true.
He never laughs at anything we say.
No, I do.
No.
Not during the show, but on the way home.
It hits him then.
Always on the way home.
We are going to talk to John Seidel, who has written this book called Second City Sinners. And we're going to... he's a Chicago Sun-Times journalist. We're going to go back in time to the days of H.H. Holmes, Al Capone, John Dillinger. I can't wait to talk about Second City Sinners.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to do that after the news. All right, Chicago gave us the blues, and Chicago gave us Al Capone, which I get really sick of people when you're on vacation and you say, where are you from? Chicago.
Right.
Oh, Al Capone.
Right.
There's more to it than Al Capone, and we're going to find out about it now. John Seidel is with us, author of Second City Sinners, True Crime from Historic Chicago's Deadly Streets. First of all, how are you, John?
I'm well. How are you?
Great.
Thanks for having me.
You are a federal courts reporter. You are a reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times. Right. And this book of yours is beautiful. Your very first one, huh?
It is. Thank you very much.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
More to our city than Al Capone, huh?
There's a lot more, yeah. I mean, of course, we talk about Capone in there, but I go back through a lot of crimes. I actually start with one that really kind of where politics intersected with the Haymarket riot in 1886 and the trial that followed that, which was really kind of a trial of the century for the 1800s in Chicago. And
what, I don't know a lot about this. Can you give me a brief synopsis?
Sure, sure. So the Haymarket riot, there was a lot of labor protests at the time. They were trying to get an eight-hour workday, and there was a rally at, I believe it was Des Plaines at Randolph and Lake. And they were up there speaking. The police told them to disperse, and right as the police approached them, somebody threw dynamite into the crowd, and it went off, and several people were killed. I think seven or eight police officers lost their lives ultimately. And they wound up putting eight men on trial for a conspiracy to murder the police officer. I believe seven were sentenced to hang, four ultimately did. But the thing is, they never actually found the bomber. And the remaining anarchists, as they were referred to, who survived and who weren't hanged, were ultimately pardoned because the governor found lots of flaws in the prosecution. It basically saying one of the things that the governor pointed out was that you never showed that the bomber had actually listened to any of the things these people said and therefore couldn't have been incited to throw the bomb. So,
got it.
So that's, I mean, we kick off with that. We talk about H.H. Holmes, the person who killed Mayor Carter Harrison. We go through the gangster era, the women who inspired the play Chicago, and we go on into the 60s with the murders by Richard Speck.
Other cities, John, certainly have graft and crime and corruption, but we seem to build off of it, don't we? What's going on in Chicago? Why do we own it the way we own it?
Yeah, I don't know. It's really part of the city's personality, for better or for worse. And part of it may be the media. You know, one thing I tried to do with this book was dive into the archives of the Chicago Daily News, a sister and predecessor paper to the Sun-Times. And, boy, just the way crime was covered in the city, 100 years ago or so, was really something else. I mean, it was like reading a daily crime novel when you picked up the paper, and I think people just kind of hung on to every word, and then ultimately it just kind of became part of the legs, the fabric of the city, again, better or worse.
I like reading about it, though. Mm-hmm. I don't, and obviously everybody does. Richard Speck was an interesting man. Do you go into great depth on him?
Certainly in what happened in 1966 and in the trial in 1967. That was one of the tougher ones to write about.
Yeah.
And honestly, it's not pleasant. And I went down to the Illinois State Archives in Springfield to pull the file on Speck just to get, and there was a lot there. Of course, there was the one survivor who ultimately identified him at the trial face to face after hiding underneath the bed while he murdered her fellow nurses. And she, of course, gave a great blow-by-blow so that we know exactly what went on in that townhouse. And so we go through that, and I include, again, some of the coverage from the Daily News and the Sun-Times.
Did you get, goosebumps when you looked at that original file from Springfield? Didn't that just make the hair on the back of your neck stand up as you were reading it?
It does, yeah. And I mean, there's it's gruesome to read about. There are crime scene photos there, too. I mean, it's difficult, but it's also as... I don't know. Throughout writing about the book, I have to say there was a little bit of a connection, especially when reading the news coverage of the crimes. I mean, of course, I cover federal courts now. It's a lot more corruption, white collar type of stuff. But I've had my turn at covering murder trials in the city. And it's something people have been doing here for a really long time. And so it's interesting to go back and see how the work was done back then.
Was the coverage dramatically or less dramatically more accurate? Like, were they really going out of their way to be gruesome in the description of these crimes back then, or did that happen later? How did that play out?
I think there was a lot of vivid detail in the old reports. Yeah. I mean, as far as accuracy, the one thing I'll say, one thing I say in the book is that, you know, newspapers aren't perfect. They're just not. And of course, there are some errors here and there. But I was actually really struck when I pulled the old historic records just about how accurate things were. And one thing I write about a guy named August Becker. He's a butcher whose wife disappeared and he suddenly has a new sweetheart. We've kind of seen this tale before. But there was one kind of twist in the trial that I couldn't really figure out until I finally found the right court file. And it wasn't necessarily the record that explained it, but I looked at the date on the file, and I went and pulled the Daily News from that day. And there was an article about that very record that I had been holding in my hand explaining what had happened. And again, very accurate. Just as far as the details that were in the record, it was there. And I saw the same thing when I wrote about Leopold and Loeb as well, when I pulled the transcript from the trial. Again, really accurate quotes in there, I thought.
I remember Leopold and Loeb learning about it, but can you refresh our memories on that as well?
Sure. Yeah, so Nathan Leopold and Richard Loeb were two rich teenagers who basically got bored and decided they wanted to try and commit the perfect crime. And
was it Bobby Franks? Was that
Bobby Franks was their ultimate victim. Yeah, yeah, he was a 14-year-old that they just picked off the street. But that was one of the things they left to the last minute after months of planning and trying to figure out how they were going to do this, how they were going to get the ransom. One of the last things they decided was who their victim was actually going to be, and they drove around looking for somebody. Bobby Franks was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And yeah, they picked him up, pulled him in the car, and there it goes.
But the genesis of this was just two rich kids who were bored and wanted to see if they could get away with a crime. That was pretty much the beginning of it, huh?
Yeah, and they thought they were smarter than everybody else. And in the end, they left behind two key clues. One, I believe it was Nathan Leopold who left his glasses in the marshland where they left the body.
Yeah.
But then also the Chicago Daily News actually helped figure out that, again, I think it was Leopold had his typewriter, that when you typed on it, that matched the typing on the ransom note that Bobby Franks' father got. And the Daily News actually got a Pulitzer for their coverage of the Bobby Franks murder.
Wow.
That's pretty incredible. We are talking with John Seidel. He is the author of Second City Sinners, True Crime from Historic Chicago's Deadly Streets. It's available now, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Right. You're federal courts reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times. We're going to take a quick break and continue. I'd like to find out more recent stuff, and if listeners have questions about some of our rich Chicago history, 312-981-7200. It's WGN. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and we are talking with John Seidel, a federal courts reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times, and his new book is called Second City Sinners, True Crime from Historic Chicago's Deadly Streets. It's available now. First of all, I have to tell you, this book is beautiful.
Thank you so much. And I have to give credit to the folks at Lions Press who put that together. I mean, I thought they did a really good job with the presentation.
Why are we so obsessed with this? We were talking to you off the air. I just need to know every last dirty detail of things, but then I'm shocked and horrified when I hear them. It's probably just our nature. We want to find out everything we can about some of these cases.
I think so. And like I was saying, I mean, I've thought about that both as a newspaper writer and also as writing this book. And I don't really know what the answer is other than I just think we're all just kind of curious about the dark side, the underbelly, you know?
Yeah. Explain this, John. I've never understood this. The reporters that cover organized crime seem to have a safeguard around them. You would think, oh, they're around these dangerous people all the time. Their lives must be in danger. But for some reason, the syndicate treats them fairly more times than not. How can that be?
You know, when I was doing research, I mean, you know, I guess I'd say that back in the day, you know, especially maybe during the Capone 20s, 30s or whatever, I think there was kind of an understanding about the role that journalists play. They managed to move around in every world, right?
Yeah.
In the police world, in the mob world, and you know, and there was, you know, I don't know if it was because they provided some information on both ends. I mean,
yeah.
I think maybe both sides found some usefulness in them and therefore just kind of let them move again with some understood kind of rules. I mean, I did come across some stories about some journalists not making it out, but I think that was when they decided to maybe try and get a little cut.
Like Capone and John Dillinger kind of like the publicity? Could that play into it a bit?
I'm sure they probably did. And I think there are rules in the organized crime world that mm-hmm. protect them.
Hands off on them.
Yeah.
So this is a historic look back from like Richard Speck backwards, correct?
That's right.
Leaves you room for a new volume, a new chapter in a new book, because there's a lot of stuff that's going on. Sure. What are some famous stories that we may not be aware of covered in this book?
In the book? One that we were talking about that stands out, I mean, I did a chapter on the lipstick killer back in the 40s, which was really... It was really troubling, really bizarre, in some ways really gruesome, but one thing that drew me to it was that I just hadn't really heard much about Bill Herons. Bill Herons was a young man. I think he was arrested when he was 17. He ultimately pleaded guilty to 3 murders. I believe Josephine Ross was one. And I think Francis Brown, forgive me if I'm getting that name wrong, but ultimately the one that really sent Chicago over the edge was the murder of 6-year-old Suzanne Degnan, who was taken from her bedroom and murdered, and her remains were later discovered. That's like every parent's worst nightmare, right? Just the little girl in bed snatched out of her window. Right. But there were a lot of questions, I think, about whether he did it. You know, he did plead guilty. But then he came back in the 50s and tried to have his conviction thrown out, said that he was given sodium pentothal, that he was beaten. The judge ultimately ruled against him, but there was, I think, a Supreme Court ruling that said that the law enforcement tactics were really questionable and should be condemned, yet we're not going to throw out the conviction. And then he spent decades really denying that he committed these crimes. And I believe, even though he was arrested in the 40s when these murders took place, I believe he actually ended up dying in 2012 and became the longest serving inmate in the Illinois Department of Corrections.
So not that long ago.
Not that long
at all.
Ago. Yeah.
Why the name lipstick applied to this?
Oh, yeah, I should explain that. I believe it was the Francis Brown murder. When they found her, so she had an apartment. There was a maid who came by to check on her. Door was open, the radio was on. They found her body in the bathroom, but somebody had taken lipstick and written a message on the wall saying, "I'm gonna do the best I can."
Do you
here
want your
for,
book to look it up?
I don't know how quickly I can find it. Let me see.
I vaguely remember hearing.
I've
this
heard
now.
The name, yeah. but I never. I didn't know that it took place in Chicago
yeah,
or any.
So
of the
when
reference.
They. Here, I'll just read the lead from the Chicago Daily News on December 10, 1945. Frances Brown, 33, former Wave, was stabbed and shot to death today in her small apartment at the Pinecrest Hotel, 3941 Pine Grove Avenue. Before fleeing, the slayer paused to scrawl this message in lipstick on the wall by her bloodstained bed. Catch me before I kill more. And I actually think that it actually went on beyond... Catch me before I kill. But there was something along the lines. Oh, here it is. For heaven's sake, catch me before I kill more. I cannot control myself. Written in lipstick on the wall. And so that's how the lipstick nickname yeah. came to apply. And they I believe they connected Herons to the Suzanne Degnan murder through a fingerprint. And then ultimately he confessed to the 3 murders as well as a series of burglaries and robberies.
It's not fair to ask you this because you don't probably have the answer. But back when some of these cases happened, it's amazing to me that they were solved because they didn't have very many ways to find things. Now, with all the DNA, with everything they have, I find it shocking that some of these cases go unsolved. I can't sleep at night sometimes thinking about some of these.
Well, you know, it makes me wonder. You're right. I mean, I don't have all the numbers on the top of my head as far as conviction rates, resolution, you know, how many cases were resolved then versus now. But you're right. What's interesting in as I look through these cases, there was always something that helped, some key clue that helped. I mean, we talked about Richard Speck and the survivor. Had that nurse not survived under that bed? Who knows what would have happened,
That's
right?
True.
Leopold and Loeb, if it hadn't been for the dropping the eyeglasses and figuring out the typewriter, who knows what they were going everywhere.
How could he have dropped his glasses? First of all, you wear glasses, so you need them to see. I just find that shocking that he would leave that behind.
Yeah.
Thankfully, he did. Mm-hmm. Also, John Dillinger, really, all I know, he was shot at the Music Box Theater, correct?
Biograph.
Or biographical.
Which I think is, yeah.
Okay, so what was his story?
Well, of course, he was a bank robber in 1933 and 1934. He went to prison as a young man and said that he really learned the ways of crime within prison. And he came out and he helped his buddies get out of prison. They just went all over the Midwest robbing banks. And it was during the Great Depression, right? So it was a time where people really kind of saw him as a Robin Hood type, really. They didn't really hate what he was doing, that he was giving it to the banks. Of course, ultimately, and then there was the escape from the prison and the jail in Crown Point,
yeah,
which with a little wooden gun. He ultimately drew federal heat, and they tracked him down to the Biograph with the help of an informant and gunned him down there. And of course, as you guys know, he's been back in the news,
yeah,
and
yeah,
we've been writing about him for the Sun-Times.
It's always funny. He was always described as, yeah, he might be a mobster, but he's also a gentleman. You don't hear that about him. Oh, yeah. All right.
A lot of these guys like that.
You know what's funny, John? As you're telling these stories, and I've seen a lot of movies, mm-hmm, I see that giant flashbulb going off. You know what I mean? Somebody's taking all kinds of
photographs. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that noise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. That's like a constant fixture in all these stories.
I can't wait to sit down and read this. It's called Second City Sinners, True Crime from Historic Chicago's Deadly Streets. And John Seidel is the author, federal courts reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times. I hope you keep in touch with us, because
absolutely,
we are all so obsessed with what's going on. So
sure. Yeah, call anytime.
And really quickly, you told Wendy and I off air, but I want to say it on air, your wife convinced you to do this book. You must be thrilled that she convinced you to do this book.
I am, and you know what? Thank you. I should say thank you to her, too.
Yeah.
Not only for convincing me to do this, but just for all the help and the support along,
yeah,
the way. It meant a lot of days where I had to go disappear and dig through records and write. And so, yeah, yeah, thank you to
it's
her.
It's paid off nicely.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Can't wait to read it. Thank
appreciate
you so
it
much.
Thank you, guys.
Ooh, Igor, this is not my match. Vampire's ball is a swanky affair.
Swanky affair.
Well, shine up your fangs, grease back your hair.
Brad Tassel, can you name this tune?
Oh, that's a good song. Oh, my.
Yeah,
that's a good
this
song. It is not the match, let me tell you that. It is the ball.
That's right. Brad Tassel's here, comedian, speaker. Well, you knew that because he's funny and he's speaking all at the same time. He's put out a CD, a new CD called Vampire's Ball, Your Ultimate Halloween Party. Brad, good to talk to you. How are things? Everything all right?
The bill is wonderful. Should I do this voice the whole time?
No. Please do not,
you'll
Brad.
Hurt your throat.
I'll stop right now.
You'll burn your throat out.
Well,
don't do that.
Well, here's what's funny is, When I originally wrote that song, I sang it straight, like a blues tune.
Yeah.
And it just something, it was just like, And then we were like, just do it as the dumb vampire, because
yeah,
it makes more sense. You know, and then it's, because now it's a kitschy, fun thing.
Yes.
But also, it's also swing, so like my mom's swing group now uses it.
Oh, they do?
A swing dance group.
Wow.
And now there's a dance. There's a line dance coming up, so it's kind of fun.
Wow.
How are you guys?
Good.
How are you guys?
I was just looking at your website, bradtassel.com, and you were on our show back in 2014, and Bill reminded me, Don't Feed the Bully was the book that you put out then, and I totally remembered it. How's everything going with that?
I've still got the podcast up on my website, and it's, well, obviously, the bullying stuff I still do as much as possible. Matter of fact, my research right after that has been downloaded many hundreds of times by educators and used in stuff like that.
That's great.
And it's still all the same, except kids are smarter now about bullying. See, the problem is kids have gotten smarter. We haven't. Like the teaching, people still walk into a school and put 500 kids in a gym and say, be nice, woo, boo, you know, and it just, none of that works. The kids are now dealing with it a lot better. Matter of fact, the number one reason kids say bullying stops is because the kid bullying them matures. Number five is intervention. So that still tells you where we are. Matter of fact, I just still sign up schools. They still read the book. We still do a ton of programs, and I've lightened up a lot with how I talk about bullying, though. Because kids are so much smarter, I want them to really feel it for themselves, and I'm not pressing them. I just want them, give them the information and make them happy, and then have them work themselves out of their situation. And if they really need help, if they're really being brutalized, then we get the school to intervene. It's very important.
Brad, not that long ago, there was something of an awakening when it came to bullying. I know that it's always existed, that it's been a problem since the beginning of time. But all of a sudden, you're putting out a book. There was a documentary called Bully about bullying. Mm-hmm. What happened that made everybody realize all of a sudden, wow, this is a problem that needs to be solved?
Well, I don't know if it's all of a sudden. First of all, we started noticing that, hey, gosh, look at this. People that are different are people. What?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. People that look different, sound different. And what we have, too, now is kids are starting to feel like, wait a minute, I get to be this. I tell kids all the time, you get to be you no matter who you are. We used to teach bullying, hey, try to fit in. Try to be like them. That'll help. Are you nuts?
Yeah.
You be you, and they've got to deal with it, and they've got to be nice about it. And it just cracks me up when people say those, and we still have places that do that. So the point is that kids have decided, I'm going to be me. I'm going to be as weird or crazy or wonderful as I can be. And you still got kids trying to hurt that, but the kids now who are that way know that it's wrong. Bullying works mostly when you start feeling bad about being who you are. Now kids know that it's bullying. They know that that kid's a jerk. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, and as you get older, I mean, I was always kind of quirky, and that doesn't go over so well when you're younger and trying to fit in with the norm. But, you know, when you get older, I like the quirkiness.
That's right. My daughter, my wife and I just talked about this. She's at a special school for gifted and at the university, and we talk. She's so self-aware. See, once kids are self-aware, they know it's not them. They know it's the jerk being the jerk.
Yeah.
And you know what? It still sucks to be bullied, but it's not going to affect you for a lifetime because you know it's finite and it's going to be over soon.
You are such a man of many hats. You're a comedian. You are an educator, teacher, or just public speaking at schools?
And I'm drunk.
Oh, wow.
I'm sorry. Wait.
How about that?
I know. It's great. So, I have a master's in behavioral science and with concentrations in counseling and gifted education. But I only did that because I was never going to work in the field because those lovely people make zero money.
Yeah.
Comedy, just getting off the Carnival cruise ship. And let's put a plug in for Carnival, who give me tons of money a year to do shows. They pay so much more to go do stand-up than I would ever get to be a counselor. And it's kind of a sad thing, actually.
It is, because the kids need the counselors. And you could be the funny counselor.
And they're taking the counselors away. We've got a thing in this country now that it's not that important. Every school should have a counselor. Every school should have one-on-one counseling with kids, and not just about where they're going academically. And we've suddenly taken away the importance of this, and mental is just as important as physical and educational, because you can't learn if you're totally depressed all the time. You know what I mean? Or you're being brutalized. So,
makes sense.
I know. So yes, I do all those. I just won for the Halloween album is based on a book of poems that I do, that I just won a Highest Honor Pinnacle Award for the programs that I do for educators.
Congratulations.
That program.
That's awesome. Good news, Brad.
I know. So everybody out there, buy this album and make me rich so I can quit everything.
Who's the target audience for the CD for Vampire's Ball Ultimate Halloween Party? Is it kids? Who is it?
Well, here's the fun thing. First of all, the unserved group of kids that it's for is about 7 to 14-ish.
Yeah.
But the Vampire's Ball song that you just played is really hitting with dance groups, like party dance, like swing, older adult swing. And I'm talking 60s and 70s who love to swing dance. And that one and Zombie Pie, I don't know if you've heard the whole album, you probably... You heard literally just that amount you've played so far, total. But Zombie Pie is kind of a reggae zombie song that is hitting in some stations in New York in that college. I've had some colleges.
Yeah.
And then Parts for Frankenstein, which I thought would be the kiddiest song, is the one that I just got 6 or 7 colleges playing too. So it hits a lot of groups. It's based on, the whole thing is a show. If you look at it, the first track is The House, which is a spoken word, which haunted houses are using. and amusement parks because it's so spooky and it's fun. It's spoken. It tells about a haunted house, and it really sets up a perfect mood. And then our show is kind of a little Broadway Halloween show that goes through these series of songs that are all totally different. Everything. And the goal is to have real Halloween, that great spooky vibe,
yeah,
without being too disgusting or too inappropriate.
A little safer.
Let's hear a little of the zombie pie right now.
Oh, yeah, let's hear a zombie pie. I'll sing with it.
All right. We all will.
I'm hungry
too. But I am dead. Dead people don't eat fruit. I know. Let's have zombie pie. Okay, that's enough.
All right. Oh. Where do people get this CD?
Everywhere.
It's available everywhere, Brad. Are you sure?
You tell me where it couldn't. Okay, here's the thing, though.
Yeah.
When I try to sell the CDs.
Yes.
I'm standing here holding a CD, and I say, folks, you can give me $10 for this CD, which obviously iTunes or Amazon, easy. And I say, but I hate to tell you this, if you're on any music service, Amazon, Spotify, Pandora, iHeart, they're all there. And if you have that service, they're all free to download.
How
so
about
you
that?
Download them because you're paying for that service.
Right.
So there are literally everywhere. But I would love if people would, you know, buy this CD. Or, like, go on Spotify and get on my Ultimate Halloween Party playlist. It's not only got my songs, but it's got 2 hours almost of great Halloween music that you could just play in the background. And here's the funny thing. iTunes, they're trying to get people to stop buying music.
Right.
Because they want you on their service.
Sure.
And in a way, it's better because if somebody buys this album for $8.95, we get $2.80. But if they download just Parts for Frankenstein and they play it 100 times,
yes,
on Pandora, I get $1. And if they play it 1,000 times, you get paid every time they do it, even though it's expensive.
I do?
Does that make sense?
No, the person who puts this song out.
Bill left.
No, that doesn't make sense.
As my
Brad, congratulations on this and all the successes you've come up with. If you want to know more, you want to go to ultimatehalloweenparty.com. Brad, have a great Halloween. I know it's also your birthday, so happy birthday that day.
My birthday is the greatest birthday in the world, isn't it?
Yep.
I mean, there's no better birthday.
Everyone gets candy for Brad's birthday.
And you get to kill people.
Well, within reason.
It's legal to murder people.
All right.
I think that's great.
How about that?
Don't bring that up on your Carnival cruise line.
No, don't mention that.
Oh, no.
Thanks, Brad.
That's where I kill the people.
Be careful.
BradTassel.com. Brad, TASSELL.com. Thank you so much. We need to take a quick break and more show coming your way on 720 WGN.
Do you say shebang? I heard you say shebang.
Yes.
How about that?
312-981-7200 is the number to call or text us. We're getting a lot of texts out there. WGN on the stream is running President Donald Trump's speech right now at McCormick Place.
Normally it is a simulcast of whatever's going on regular WGN, which would be you and me right now.
Well, there are two streams, so you can find us.
Yeah.
It's just I listen
on
the
app.
What
do you need to do differently?
On the app, you can go to WGN Extra 2, and we are on that stream, and that's been going all morning.
Right.
Normally
on that, like, we're normally on stream 1, and then old episodes of Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea are on stream 2.
Jules Verne?
No, it's not Jules Verne. That's 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Oh, sorry, I get my sea salts.
That happens. But today it's a little bit different.
Yeah, see, I'm a little baffled because usually we are on WGN Extra and you can just leave it there all day.
Right. Not today. You should have said shebang. I think that's what screwed everything up.
But here's the problem. There are people texting saying, you know, we would like to listen to you. There are some people that would like to listen to the president speak, and that's fine, but they can't hear me say go to the other stream
because they're already on the other stream.
So can we get a message to Donald Trump to have him say,
for him to mention it?
Hey, for WGN listeners,
right,
go to the other stream. Right. We can't cross
that
the streams.
Easy. I don't know why they wouldn't do that.
Jasmine, is there any different way to do it if you're listening via computer? Is there a way to get to the other streams?
Yeah. So you can just go to WGNradio.com and click on Bill and Wendy, listen to Bill and Wendy. Then there's three streams. There's a regular stream, WGN
Radio.
Three
streams, Wendy.
Listen. That's what we're on right now. So if you click on that, you should be able to hear the show.
Which one are we on right now?
WGN Radio 720, and it says dash listen.
Jasmine, okay. What about people who listen to us on fillings in their teeth? Does that change at all, or is that the same?
Stand by.
Can I tell you that doesn't work anymore? I am not getting a good reception because we don't have metal fillings typically anymore. It's mainly porcelain.
Oh, interesting.
Now, I know my dentist, Dr. Paul, might still do the metal ones, but that, like, if it shows, if you open your mouth.
Right.
I like to see white. So do most people on your teeth, not silver. But if it's in the back on the top, maybe they still use it.
Yeah.
But I don't think.
But that was a thing for a while. You could pick up radio signals on your fillings.
Who really did you know that did that?
Lori Partridge on an episode of The Partridge Family. I remember that episode.
Who in real life?
Oh, in real life? I don't know anybody.
Do you know who did that?
Just on TV.
And the old metal fillings were fun when your brother used to take you to church with his friend, and then he would take a piece of double mint and take the foil and make it into a little square and say, Wendy, I know you're bored in church, so bite down on this with your metal filling.
That's a good time.
Oh, my God. I screamed in the middle of church I had been saved.
Wow. Can I recommend a TV show that I saw over the weekend?
Yes.
All right. On HBO, there is a comedy special called The Great Depression. And it is a guy named Gary Gulman, whose work I've admired for years. He's very, very original. He's very, very funny. He was on Last Comic Standing a couple years ago. He made a name for himself on that. Since then, he's appeared on Conan O'Brien a bunch of times. He's been on most of the late-night talk shows, not all of them. But I've always enjoyed his work. I had no idea. I've seen him for years on TV. I've never met him in real life. I had no idea that deep down, in addition to being one of America's funniest comics, he was also battling bouts of depression constantly, so much so that he had to stop doing comedy and checked himself into a facility for a while. So he does this comedy special, which is a mixture of his regular stand-up and his backstory of the battles he's fought with depression, how his wife has helped him, how friends have helped him, how other people that he's met along the way have helped him. It's so incredibly honest, and I give him, you know, such high marks for being that incredibly brutally honest on TV. I'm sure it must have been a hard sell for HBO as they say to him, we want you to do a comedy special. And he says, I'll do the special, but I also want to tell you what's going on behind the scenes. It's not easy for a lot of people to do, but he does it really, really well. The comedy parts are very, very funny. The depression parts really make you stop and think that there's probably a bunch of people out there that you know that are going through this, and you have no idea what they're going through. He talks about the way he masked it and was able to hide it for years, and it really is very eye-opening.
And that's just it. A lot of people did have to mask it and live with it and try and act like nothing was wrong. And it's not just like, oh, suck it up, little wrangler. You'll be okay.
Right.
And I am pleased to see on HBO's page, it's the HBO.com and then Gary Gulman, G-U-L-M-A-N.
Yeah.
Down at the bottom, it has resources for more information supporting mental health and suicide prevention. And NAMI, there's a website link for that, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. So great job by HBO to help out because people need resources and need to be able to talk about it. And he's funny.
He's so funny.
I gotta see this.
He's really, really, he's such a great writer. He's such a great stand-up. I've never met him. We were going to have him on a couple years ago, 2 years ago, because he does this bit where he talks about how grapefruit is the worst food there is.
And that's your favorite
thing. And that's my favorite food. So Jasmine reached out to him, and we had actually scheduled a date, and then he had to cancel. Well, in the special, he talks about how 2017 was the worst year of his life, how he had to stop doing everything. He couldn't do stand-up anymore. He couldn't make appearances anywhere. And that was right in the heart of when we were trying to get him on. So everything kind of fit into place. I want so badly to bring him on just to say to him, thank you for being that brave, because he really is. I mean, it's such a personal look at something that everybody tries to hide. And it's so ironic that a guy who makes his living going up there and being as funny as he is was just battling all these demons off the stage, you know?
And he does a lot of appearances. There's an event that he did where he was talking mental health with Judd Apatow, Maria Bamford, and Patton Oswalt.
Maria Bamford's story is almost identical. When she came up, she told the exact same story, that sometimes their only solace in life was that hour a night on stage, that the rest of the life, you know, they didn't want to leave their bed. They just stayed in their room all the time. They couldn't do anything. They couldn't function. It's such a horrible story, but told in such an inventive way that I give him nothing but high marks for being that brave.
I have got to see this. The Great Depression, Gary Gulman, Gulman. I'm curious to know about the grapefruit thing, because I know taking anti-anxieties, a lot of times it says do not take with citrus because you can't absorb it in your body or something.
That the drug cannot be absorbed because of the citrus?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't.
I wonder if that has anything to do with it.
It very well could. It could. So, yeah, we'll try our best to get him on. But I'm telling you, if you have a chance and you see this on HBO, it's called The Great Depression. His name is Gary Gulman. He's really, really good.
He looks so familiar. I've seen him in something.
When you see him, you'll recognize him.
Yeah.
He's been on all the late night talk shows. He's really good.
All right. Well, thanks for your little tip.
Sure.
We appreciate it.
Sure.
Eric Zorn will stop by for a little visit. He is taking a helicopter into the studios, and he will be here shortly.
Whiskey and Zorn. Whiskey and Zorn.
Reborn when Eric Zorn comes in.
And it's natural, Wendy. You can't help yourself.
It's refreshing.
Yeah. You just have that way about you, Eric. What's wrong with that?
Nothing is wrong
with it. Nothing's wrong with it.
It's patented, even, Mike.
Wait, you're calling yourself refreshing?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
You're aware of your own refreshingness.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Eric Zorn is here. He writes a column for the Chicago Tribune. His name's right on it. You can't miss it. How are you? Everything good?
I'm good. I spent the last hour watching President Trump. I wasn't there in person.
Yeah.
Speaking to the International Association of Police Chiefs.
Yes.
Down at McCormick Place. And
what did you take away
from it?
Well,
it was very interesting because he went directly. I've probably been on the newscast. You and I, we've been gossiping.
Yes. Here,
but he went after Superintendent Eddie Johnson, who was not
Donald
there.
Donald Trump did?
Donald Trump did.
Okay.
President Trump went after Superintendent Johnson. In a way that I mean, I expected it, actually, because Trump never lets a slight pass. And he started off by thanking all the great people who were here in the audience. And then he turned and pivoted, and he said, you know, there's one person who's not here today. We're in Chicago, and I want to talk to him more than anybody else. This person should be here because maybe he could learn something.
Mm.
And the background for this is that about a week ago, Eddie Johnson announced that he would not be attending the speech. He has been at the convention,
mm-hmm.
the gathering, but he is not attending the speech because he feels like Donald Trump does not reflect the values of the people of the city of Chicago, and he didn't want to sit there and seem to endorse them by being present.
And that's his option.
And that is totally his option.
But the mayor has chosen that option. The governor has chosen that option. Pretty much every major politician in and around Chicago has chosen that option.
I don't think there are many. There are some Republican congressmen from around the state who are there, but
and
I don't
that's
think
it.
There are any locals. Yes, he referred to those people as the stupid politicians who have no idea what the hell they're doing in his speech. It was a typical Trump speech. If you watched many of them, he seems to be following an outline rather than a script.
Yeah.
He's free associating, and I expect the background again to continue with this. Background. Then the Fraternal Order of Police last week issued a vote of no confidence in Johnson,
mm-hmm.
and they said that the final straw was this announcement of his that he wasn't going to be going to the speech, and they were saying this disrespects the office and it disrespects President Trump, who is favored by law enforcement officials everywhere. And
even
so,
in Chicago?
Well, yeah, even in Chicago. I guess the Fraternal Order of Police represents Chicago. It's the union representing the Chicago police officers. And I wrote a column for Sunday saying this superintendent, who is in trouble in a number of ways, he was just picked up. Remember,
we
talked about it last week. He's picked up near his house, asleep at the wheel of his car. He pulled over because he says some medication issues.
New medication
left him woozy, and he had a couple of drinks with dinner.
And no breathalyzer.
And there was no breathalyzer.
Right.
So this was a controversy. And then even before that, earlier in October, there was a controversy because the city inspector general's report had come out and said that he had been present at the early showing of the Laquan McDonald video to the top brass.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he hadn't said anything. He had just gone along with the conclusion that it was a good shoot. So it was my view that Johnson had to go, that he was on his way out.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of talk about that.
I now think that the Fraternal Order of Police and now Donald Trump have given Eddie Johnson the job security that he needs to make it to next year, when he will be, I guess, of retirement age, that he can get his full superintendent's pension. So I don't think Eddie Johnson's going anywhere anytime soon. Because
how have they helped him?
Well, they've helped him because they have made him the face of this, of being anti-Trump in Chicago. Chicago voted 12% for Trump in 2016. This is not Trump country by any means. And for Lori Lightfoot to throw over, to throw over Eddie Johnson right now in the face of demands from the Fraternal Order of Police and then all this criticism of Donald Trump would be really bad politics for her. She's got a lot more things to worry about than that right now with the school strike. So I think Eddie Johnson is really safe. You want to? We can go through other things that he said about him.
Go back for a second.
Yeah.
His percentage was what amongst 12. Voters in Chicago?
12.4% Trump won in 2016.
12.4. All right. So tell me the difference between, and you already know this, Eric, but the people who like him don't just like him, they love him.
Yes.
So what is the difference when, even though you have a low number, the support is that strong, even though it's a low number, does that make a bit of a difference when they're that outspoken in how much they follow the president? It's got to play some role, even though it's a low number.
Well, I think 12.4% is too low to make a real difference in the city in terms of you know, the political valence of it. But when you have what you're talking about nationally, it's a very interesting situation, because you have a situation where you have a guy who's, you know, his polling numbers usually are somewhere around 40%, but those people are strong. Mm-hmm. Those people are going to come out and vote. And then you've got a Democratic candidate, whoever it might be, who's going to be dividing the party.
Yeah, who is it going to be?
Either too liberal, too moderate, too old, whatever. The Democrats have not really gotten behind anybody yet, and they may not be behind anybody. It may be one of those situations that we had in 2016, where there really wasn't a candidate that excited enough people in the Democratic base to get out. So you had people like Dr. Jill Stein was it, and who was the Tribune endorsed the guy? I can't remember his name now. The Libertarian candidate,
the guy who's running as a Republican this time around.
No, is he running as a Republican?
I think so. Bill somebody, right?
Oh God, how can we forget this? Johnson, wasn't it?
Is it? Yeah.
All right. Oh, I don't remember him. That's terrible.
All right, so give us the specifics on what his attack was on Eddie Johnson.
Okay, well, he says these are, he made very insulting statements after all I've done for police, Trump said. He says he's done more for police than any other president has ever done. I don't know what he bases that claim on or exactly what it is he feels that he's done for police, but he says this. And then he talks about Chicago's murder statistics. He says that there were 565 people murdered in Chicago last year, which is true. And he talked about all the people who've been shot. And then he says all this is happening despite the fact, Trump says, that Chicago has the toughest gun laws in the United States. Now, this is not true.
No.
Because there was a time when Chicago had tried to clamp down on guns and had instituted some really tough gun laws. They've all been overturned. They're dead letter. Chicago has just normal gun laws for the rest of the country. But he likes to repeat this over and over again, like it proves something about gun control. Then he talked about Jussie Smollett.
Oh, he
did. He segued into talking about Jussie Smollett. He said Jussie Smollett beat himself up. He said it was MAGA country, and that's a hate crime. Then he said the whole thing with Smollett is a scam. It's a real big scam, just like the impeachment of your president. Then he went on to talk about how there was this improvement in the crime statistics around the country, and he said that we've had a lot of improvement in crime around the country, a 10% drop in crime around the country. Unlike here, he said, unlike here in Chicago. And then he said, boy, if you added in, even when you add in Chicago's terrible statistics, we've still had a drop in crime. This is another lie, I'll just say. Through mid-October, this is a Tribune story, both homicides and shooting incidents have fallen by 11% in Chicago this year. And these numbers continue the double-digit declines in 2018 and 2017 that we've had. So, I mean, I'm not saying we have great, this is a great thing to be proud of. We have all these people, all these shootings, all these murders. Yeah. But the truth is that the trend in Chicago is very similar to the trends around the country. Trump has come here and basically attacked Chicago politicians and also the superintendent of police. This was totally predictable, though, right?
I mean, why would you come to a city and berate them and make fun of them? Isn't his job to get support?
He's not. He knows he's not going to win Illinois. He's not going to win votes in Chicago. He's speaking to a national audience when he comes to these things. He's speaking to these police chiefs around the country, it's something that he does a lot when he gives his speeches. He's going there ostensibly to speak to the local people, but he knows that he gets a national platform. I don't know, C-SPAN covered this. I don't know that CNN did. I was watching another Tribune app until I walked into the studio, actually. Mm-hmm. Is he still talking? No, he's done now, finally. Another thing he talked about was, which is, you know, did you remember when he was campaigning? He came here and he said afterwards, after he left, he said, I talked to a Chicago motorcycle cop, and he told me that he could solve the violence problem in this country in one day.
Yeah.
I could solve it in one day. Well, who was that? Who was this person, Mr. Trump? Well, I don't know. He was somebody I spoke to. We've challenged this story. The media's challenged this story. Like, who is this person who thinks, this alleged police officer who thinks he's got an answer to crime in one day? And he says this to Trump, and then Trump doesn't follow up with, okay, well, what's your plan? What's your idea? He just says, you know, good for you, sir, and then gets onto the plane.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is when he was a candidate. Now that he's a president, he's repeating this story, and he keeps saying that he's got somebody in the police department, motorcycle cop, and he gives all these details about where they were and what he was doing and how they were making a photograph as they were getting ready to leave. More detail than he's ever given, and we're still not going to find this guy because he doesn't exist.
The name of the guy I couldn't think of earlier who was a Libertarian candidate but is now running as Republican is Bill Weld.
Bill Weld. That's not Bill Weld, though.
No.
No.
Somebody different. All right. We'll take a break. More with Eric Zorn. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
That will be our bonus hour, not to confuse.
Right. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Eric Zorn, fine columnist for your Chicago Tribune. Eric, there was a tradition, a radio tradition that we started years and years and years ago. Please explain.
Well, it goes back to Howard Miller being on the air here, and my grandfather would come in and read the best tweets of Halloween every year.
Grandpa Zorn would come in the week of Halloween.
Howard Miller would say, what are the best tweets about Halloween?
Yeah.
And my grandfather would read them, but no one knew what tweets were.
At the time, tweets were not a thing, he would read them anyway.
Yeah, it would happen. So it's been going on just about every year, and we've continued it here on the Bill and Wendy Show.
Yep. People clamor for it.
I read the top 10 tweets of Halloween, and they're posted on
Could you call them Twicker tweets? Would you be comfortable with that, or would you rather not?
I could, but I would never.
I like that.
I would never do that.
No. Trick or tweets.
Yeah? All right. Think about it, Eric. Maybe for next year.
Cream of tweet.
Anyway. Tweet Georgia Brown. Go on.
No, I think we're done.
All right.
Okay. No, these are the top. These are of all time.
Yeah.
I revise the list. Now, some of them, if listeners really, really have good long memories, they'll remember some of these from the previous years, going back to the '50s.
But that's nostalgia. That's how nostalgia.
Get to the point.
The best Halloween costume. The best Halloween costume is Amelia Earhart. All you have to do is not show up to the party.
That's good.
I'm laughing, but I know it's too soon. But I'm still laughing, Eric.
On Halloween, we dress up as skeletons, but every other day of the year, our skeletons dress up as us.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care that he's a, quote, four-year-old child. His pirate costume is historically inaccurate garbage, and he needs to be told.
Do more Amelia Earhart ones. I like those.
Fun fact, if someone is playing Christmas music in October, you're legally allowed to kill them and use their corpse for a Halloween display.
Wow.
True?
Wow.
That's true?
Yeah, that's
true. Like it.
Yeah.
I'm ready for Christmas.
By the way, all the attributions are at chicagotribune.com/Zorn, and Jasmine will put them on
the
Facebook page.
I can't even pronounce
some of these, frankly, Twitter handles. Mm. For Halloween, I'm giving out stern advice about the importance of thrift and gumption. Like that?
That was great because it had the word gumption in it.
Gumption. You know what? When I read that, I thought Bill's going to like it.
I like gumption.
The worst part about breaking up right before Halloween is now I have to explain at every party why I'm dressed as half a horse.
That's very funny.
For Halloween, I'm going as someone who has given up on life, but like in a slutty way. This Halloween, I'm going to dress up as me from last Halloween when I dressed up as future me.
Oh.
That's a thought provoker.
That's a circle of life.
That's a good one, right, yeah. After a certain age, the only Halloween costume you feel like wearing is Brian Wilson's bathrobe.
Oh, that's my costume.
And this is a sad one. That's the last one.
Thank you for the warning.
The hardest thing about carving a pumpkin these days is finding a newspaper to spread out on the table.
That is sad. That is accurate and sad.
I thought it was...
It's very sad.
I wanted to delete that tweet, but it is very good. So,
do you get anywhere near as many trick-or-treaters as you got years ago, or has it gone down a bit?
We haven't been. This is interesting. We were shopping the other day. Johanna and I were out, and we were grocery shopping together. It's like one of the little dates we have sometimes. And we were buying Halloween candy, and I wanted to buy like 200 pieces, and she said, "Are you kidding? Like we don't get that many anymore. Mm-hmm. We used to get a lot more, but our neighborhood. I think what's happened is that there are certain neighborhoods in the city, and maybe in some of your suburbs, that are known for giving out really good candy, and all the kids go there.
Right.
And I would be interested to hear from your listeners.
Yeah.
Like how many pieces do they get? Because we will probably give out like 50 to 75. Little mini candy bars, and there are places where people, I think they give out like 500 to 700 of them.
We give out a lot. I'm going to try and keep track of how many bags we give out this year.
And like Andersonville in Chicago is really known for that. I think parts of Logan Square are now known for it,
for giving away
giving away really good candy. So the people bring their kids there, and I think it's a neat thing when kids from neighborhoods that are maybe less well advantaged come to neighborhoods where people have more,
sure,
and they are able to give more candy, and they can walk around and they can really have a nice Halloween rather than going around in their neighborhoods and right, maybe not getting as much.
Right.
So I think it's a nice thing. It's a nice multicultural thing, but I think it seems to be concentrating in certain neighborhoods now. So we are getting fewer. What about you?
It's strange. I've noticed neighborhoods kind of have a turnover rate where the kids that would go every year all of a sudden are in high school or college, so they're not going to go trick-or-treating, and then takes a couple years. Do you get a lot of high school and college kids?
I get a kid showing up like in a sport coat going, "Yeah, I'm dressed as a businessman." Like, it's not a costume, son. That's your dad's.
Wow.
That's your dad's sport coat.
Eric, have a happy and safe Halloween. I know you get crazy on Halloween.
We'll be happy,
Halloween,
but it will be safe.
All right, I hope it will be. Thank you so much. That's Eric Zorn of the Tribune. We'll be back in a moment. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
And news coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.